Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for tuning in KSLM this fine day here on 104.3 FM and 1220 AM as we now present Good Morning Salem with Stacy Ann.
Good morning to you. Hello, I'm Stacy Ann and OTGIF. Thanking God it's Friday. What plans do you have this weekend? Well, it looks like we'll see some sunshine this weekend. That's good news. If you have a pile of leaves in your yard, maybe you can get that taken care of this weekend, as it looks like it'll be rainy today, but not so much through the weekend, but it'll be a little bit cooler. So you want to dress in layers, and that is the mom in me. I have to say, first thing I do when I wake up, I want to see the weather and I want to know how to dress because, you know, as a mother of children, and certainly at one point I had five or six in the house because I was fostering as well. And I had to make sure everybody had all of their, you know, their backpacks, their homework, their things signed, their daily folders, their, you know, the appropriate gym shoes, you know, their lunch money, all of those things that now 10 years later, I don't really even think about anymore, but I go back and I think, how did I do that? How did I do that? And let alone now I am so, my heart is just going out to these parents who are trying to juggle going to school, going to work, getting their kids, having them learn from home on computers, the curve of teaching your children how to even use some of these programs on a computer when you've been trying to supervise them and not have a lot of what they call now screen time, you know, and now that is the new norm, right? Where we get all these kids in front of a screen and we're saying that this is normal, and a lot of times I've heard from several parents, not just here in Oregon, but all across the United States, that are struggling with the screen becoming more of a parent than they are, and not really feeling comfortable about what's influencing their child's day-to-day thinking process and all of that. And so this is an hour that I think you'll be very interested in, because there's some great things going on despite kind of a silver lining amidst all the difficulties. And I certainly, my heart goes out to your teachers out there. I know we are pretty harsh at times talking about, oh, the lockdown and the schools and always talking about all the things where they're missing the mark. But let's just take a moment and pause for a second and say thanks to you teachers who have had your whole lives upended and trying to figure out how to make this happen and do your job. And many of you have children at home as well. So you're not only trying to help others with their students and their children, but you're helping your own children. It is something beyond comprehension. And now as we talk about potentially another lockdown, as they are saying, numbers are increasing. It was in the Oregonian this morning, 805 new coronavirus cases, shattering the old mark. And it's certainly, I will say this again, and I'll keep hitting this drum. When they say 805 new coronavirus cases, it is inaccurate. That's presumptive mixed in there along with cases. And anytime I've tried to get confirmation of how many cases, they won't tell me. And I think it's a little bit overblown in my mind. And I'd like to see these numbers. I'd also like to know the increase in testing across the state. And so we know that a lot of these benchmarks in schools and going back to schools in person are based on the coronavirus cases. And so in an effort to stay engaged, stay connected, I have the pleasure of having this gentleman in the studio who's going to bring some good news to us this morning on what's going on in Oregon and how we can team together and look for solutions amidst all these mandates. And I have Mark Thielman. Did I say that right, Mark?
You did, yes.
All right, Mark, thank you for joining me today. And you had a little bit of a drive to the studio today. Mm-hmm. Yep, you came in, and thank you. How are the roads?
The roads are good, just a little wet.
Yep. You're a little wet today. There we go. I think I got you on the air. A little wet from rain. It's raining from the road report. I always do that with our guests. Hey, give us a road report because you drove in this morning. So glad to have you here. What is your role and what do you do for day-to-day work?
So I'm the superintendent of Alsea School District, and it's a small school district between
Philomath and Waldport, kind of in the Coast Range.
Mm-hmm.
We're 25 miles from everything.
Oh, my goodness. So you are I love that part of the world. Mm-hmm. I've been through going to the coast, going on my way to Newport, and it's mm-hmm. a gorgeous town. So in your community there, what kind of industry, what are people doing for work in that area?
Well, it used to be timber and ranching and small business. Now, with the death of timber, mm-hmm. it's the school is the number one employer.
Incredible. And how many people work at the school?
Well, this year, we've almost had to double the size of the staff, so probably 70, a little over 70, which
Incredible.
Is a lot in a town of 400 people.
And student-wise, what's your population?
Well, we have a brick-and-mortar population because we opened one of the few schools that was allowed to open, mm-hmm. K-12. So we have 240 actual students plus 18 preschool kids on top of that. And then, of course, we have our online programs, which
we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
We have, I met you through Brianna, mm-hmm. who is actually in Clackamas County, and she had shared with me what was going on. And I know a lot of these parents are struggling with what can we do with our kids? And mm-hmm. so this program is Learn at Home Oregon. Talk to me a little bit how this got started.
Well, it really was a product of the shutdown last spring. Mm-hmm. And because we're a small school district and we were already, all our brick and mortar kids get a computer. We provide all that. We don't charge any fees. Mm-hmm. And because we're kind of a high poverty demographic of students.
Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of giving kids full access, we just provide those devices rather than asking parents to pay for them. And so that was fortunate because when the shutdown came, we transitioned our district about 2.5 weeks ahead of any mandate to do so.
Wow.
And that was kind of an interesting thing. So when the shutdown happened, we actually were on our calendar spring break. And so that actually gave us some time because our kids were off anyway to mm-hmm. kind of get ramped up so that when we went off spring break 2 weeks later, we were in full operation long before our neighboring districts. And not to disparage them, but we were just small and nimble and we could maneuver quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And during the two-week interim, my administrative team and I met, and, you know, we went through all the concerns that everybody has. And, you know, what do these metrics mean? What is the shutdown going to mean? And, mm-hmm. and what is our role going to be? And so I just really focused my administrative team just very directly because, you know, I basically said, we have only one thing before us, and that is to maintain the confidence of the parents and families and students we serve.
Mm.
So we have to do all kinds of crazy things in order to do that. So we got a waiver from ODE to provide summer meals program.
Mm-hmm.
So because we didn't have that, but we got it by the end of the 2 weeks. So we began delivering meals, vans and buses, Chromebooks, every because a lot of kids left there, so we had to get them to them.
Mm-hmm.
We began corresponding regularly with our parents through emails and direct phone calls. If we didn't hear back from a student, we went to their house, which was definitely surprised a few families. And we did more than just deliver school stuff and content. So if they didn't have internet, we the school got them hooked up and mm-hmm. we paid for it in some circumstances because equal access was such an important thing if you're going to do distance learning. Without a good internet bandwidth and operation, it's kind of like watching a Netflix movie where it buffers every 90 seconds.
Right.
That's bad education. So we did a whole lot of, what probably would seem to some crazy things. We even delivered toilet paper and other resources to families because of the toilet paper shortage. The nice thing is we have commercial toilet paper at LC,
mm-hmm.
so there was no shortage of that.
That's fantastic.
So it really went a long way.
So it's kind of like it reminded me of what happened here with the wildfires,
mm-hmm.
how people just took action and they got engaged and they got involved and they started doing the neighborly thing. It sounds like you already had a foundation where you're living, where you really were pretty well connected and,
mm-hmm.
and were ready to think ahead. My question, and I love to hear about this on the internet because I know as a mother raising kids, and this was in South Dakota, there was this assumption that every family, even back 10 years ago, had internet access and mm-hmm. they were sending homework home or even had computers.
Mm-hmm.
And it caused a little bit of trouble and struggle to get the kids, you know, if they stayed after school to the library or whatever. There's a story recently right here in Rapid City with access. The libraries are closed. They have the Chromebook, but they didn't have internet at home, and the kids still had homework to do sitting on the library steps because the Wi-Fi is still available. The library mm-hmm. shut down doing
Absolutely.
His homework. And these are the things that we don't understand when families are challenged financially. You mm-hmm. stepped up, your district stepped up and got over those barriers.
Yeah, and again, kind of crazy stuff because, you know, in town, I cranked up our Wi-Fi signal so that mm-hmm. it would reach all the way across the town of Alsea so all the in-town kids could access the Wi-Fi. I mean, that's something we don't normally do mm-hmm. because, you know, if you let every household get on your network, it slows it down.
Yeah.
Well, but we were close, so we weren't using the bandwidth. We negotiated with the local providers, and we traded our bandwidth we weren't using for free internet for families that needed
Good.
It. And those were negotiations that you know, multiple companies, you know, Monroe Telephone and Pioneer and others that service our area, Illyrica, some others. They were wonderful,
mm-hmm.
and they needed our bandwidth because we weren't using it.
Right.
And everyone else was on the internet.
Was on it. And so there were some challenges there mm-hmm. as well, I'm sure, to maneuver. And so then you pre-set up the school lunch program.
Mm-hmm.
What's the percentages of students that need the school lunch program in your area?
Well, we just basically, we surveyed our parents, but we just started delivering to everyone unless they told us not to.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a huge percentage of our students. And the neat thing that came out of our model was some of the neighboring districts set up, you know, open sites where parents could come to them to get the food.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Alsea's 25 miles, and almost half our student body comes from Philomath and Corvallis mm-hmm. and Waldport and Monroe, which are, you know, more than
they're bussed
as
in
much as 40.
Yes,
yeah, they're bussed
yes.
in. So if we're going to give equal access and provide equal service, so we set up routes and, you know, went through our employee base who wants to work, who's not in the high-risk category,
mm-hmm.
and just a huge response from our awesome staff. I mean, people showed up in droves.
What have you seen as far as COVID in your particular area? Has it been high numbers? Has there been a lot?
Well, in Alsea proper, we've only had one that I'm aware of, according to the health department. But remember, because of the shutdown, when we were open for brick and mortar, we were about 170 students
mm-hmm.
last spring.
Mm-hmm.
We're now at 240.
Incredible.
And we're onboarding as much as we can, but we only have so much with the restrictions. We can
right.
only take so many. So, you know, a good 50% now comes from communities where there's a lot higher incidence of COVID,
mm-hmm.
i.e. OSU is in Corvallis.
Right.
And that created a series of conversations. But so we spent about $300,000, which is normally an entire year's operating budget in terms of, you know, discretionary spending
mm-hmm.
on PPE, safety protocols, training,
mm-hmm.
a ton of stuff. And it's paid off because we're at 13 weeks. Oh, and no COVID cases.
That's fantastic. We're going to talk a little bit more as we get into this about what you're doing there that's modeling for the whole state. I'm looking forward to this. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. We're talking about education. And what are we going to do? What are we doing? What are we going to do as we move through this winter with the COVID and all of the barriers that we have to get around? We'll be back after this. Good morning, Salem. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. On this Friday, enjoying a wonderful Friday. Thank you for tuning in. Want to say thank you to Bill Sunderland, Country Financial, Sunderland Agency, for being a morning show sponsor. You can get a hold of Bill for your insurance and financial planning needs by giving him a call, 503-885-0789. You can find him online at sunderlandagency.com. We're continuing the conversation with Mark here this morning, and we are talking about schools and how to keep our kids engaged in the process with the distance learning. And you shared last segment that because of where you're at in your community and the metrics, there's not a lot of COVID cases. You were actually able to reopen
mm-hmm.
and start school as pretty much as you knew it, except you had done all the precautions,
sure.
making sure that all of the, you know, the COVID compliant, you know, did that include moving desks and things like that?
So we had, for the younger grades, we had plexiglass kind of group barriers manufactured here in Oregon, they were done up in Tualatin, and I think they were routed over in Bend. So, you know, we found a nice local partner, and we did custom stuff because kindergartners and mask wearing takes time to train them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and some kids, not every kid can wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And those were incredibly popular. So we also provided desktop shields. And then, you know, we phase kids in on a weekly, you know, biweekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So grades K through 5, then 6, 7, 8,
mm-hmm.
And then 9 through 12. And it worked really, really well. The kids have been fantastic because they understand that keeping each other safe and following the protocols, even though they're very inconvenient, keeps our school open. And they were so grateful.
Have their friends and to interact. It's a problem a lot of folks are seeing across mm-hmm. the rest of Oregon that haven't had a chance to get face-to-face with their teachers and their peers.
Mm-hmm.
There's a real struggle out there. And so as you reopen, you see this, everybody's finding out we're reopening, and you're like, our model is working, what more can we do? Is that how you came up with Learn at Home Oregon?
I came up, because I knew when we opened for brick and mortar that, I knew from last spring that we did a much better job based on an overwhelming amount of feedback with our Learn at Home, our distance learning model. And so I thought, man, and then I was looking at what some of my colleagues were doing in their districts around the area. And basically, they were going to have school online. And I, as a father, I'm like, oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down with some innovative kind of partners and in the last week of July. And I said, I got a board meeting coming up. And how much money are you going to need? And I want a custom one login. So all the lessons we learned from last spring,
mm-hmm.
keep it simple,
mm-hmm.
limit the screen time, supplement with paper, pencil, and activities. And so that's what Learn at Home Oregon does. It tries to and also get good connections with teachers online and support. So Learn at Home does that. It's a K-8 program, and each grade level has a teacher, and we also have support staff, and we also do full special ed services, and that's been a learning curve, but we've been working very hard at that because we want all kids to be able to have education from home.
And so this program, Learn at Home Oregon, is a program that's available to any student in mm-hmm. across Oregon, but you do only have so much capacity.
Well, not, Learn at Home, we're ramping up.
Okay.
So I started with 2 teachers.
Okay, gotcha.
And now we have 6.
All right.
Plus some supplementary staff.
Okay.
And so we're investing in it,
mm-hmm.
and hundreds of families have signed up. So we're almost around 500 kids.
Fantastic.
And growing.
And so what it says, according to recent polling, there's an erosion happening of the public's trust within public education institution. Additionally, Oregon students have experienced instability as several Oregon counties go between the phases, unable to meet the COVID-19 metrics needed in order to fully reopen for in-person learning. But all of these families are discovering that there is this program that has a potential coming alongside. So help me understand, there's still an Oregon student. Is it like a charter school, or
so,
is it a...
So, yeah, we're the ALSEI school district, but we're ALSEI charter school K-12.
Okay,
and,
gotcha.
And the nice thing about our situation is we are not on the state list of virtual schools. So
mm-hmm.
so schools cannot deny, other home districts can't deny transfer of these students into Learn at Home. And
that's been
a huge, huge problem.
If
you look at the list of appeals at ODE, it's hundreds, probably 1,000 or more appeals where desperate parents are trying to get their children into an online program, and the district said, well, we've lost 3% enrollment, we're not going to let them go.
Well, here's something, what you just said is so instrumental. They're not going to let your student go, and here sets up the conflict. Parental rights in education and wanting to direct your student and making sure that they're getting the resources. And then you have schools that they see the writing on the wall that if they don't have that number, it's a financial thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
There's a challenge there.
Well, and ironically, we in ALSEI, there's a community value, whether you're left or right or liberal or conservative, there's community agreement that parents' rights to raise their children predates government.
Mm.
Go way back to the, you know, caveman days.
Right.
And so we try to emulate that value. And so we work very hard to communicate that we are a non-virtual online program.
Mm.
And I've sent many letters to many HR personnel and superintendents around the state saying, you know, explaining to them, you have to release these kids.
Right. And so as and these kids start learning from you, then they get the credits and the things that they need. And yeah. And this virtually can continue on and may be more value than some classes that they've been taking, because it looks like it's well balanced and rounded mm-hmm. with the curriculum.
That's the number one feedback we get mm-hmm. is parents like the balance, and mm-hmm. they like the teacher check-in in the morning, and there's a schedule so students can see other kids, and the curriculum is kind of computer module-based, and it's proficiency-based, so students can learn at their own pace, and if they get to the end of a unit and they don't get 80%, the computer tells them, go back and review these sections.
Oh.
Parents really appreciate that because they're not teachers.
Right.
And so then the program balances for the student as they get some things right and some things wrong. It's kind of a really wonderful proficiency format. So we don't do the old, you know, the kind of the letter grades where the teacher grades the work.
Mm-hmm.
Because of this format, we can't do that, obviously.
So
the system itself grades based on proficiency. And so as soon as the student completes, they get to move to the next module. They can go at their own pace. They can go faster or slower. And that's been a real hit.
Oh, that's incredible. I know a few years ago, my youngest daughter was in a system similar to that. It was more paper and pen, mm-hmm. but a system she got to pace herself a little more, and she grew and ended up graduating early. It was quite an accomplishment for her. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. We're talking about education and options right here in Oregon for our children. We'll be back after this. Good morning to you. Thank you for tuning in to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. I'm Stacey Ann. Glad to be hanging out with you on this Friday. Want to remind you, this broadcast will be saved to podcasts on our website at kslm.news. Share it with your friends and family, particularly if you have Oregonian friends that are struggling with the whole school thing and wondering what solutions are out there, what you can do, because we want to spread the good news about resources in our community. And this Learn at Home program is incredible. Let me kind of go through some of the highlights. Free and open to all residents of Oregon, this is a public, individualized, home-based distance learning education program. Learn at Home is a fully accredited K-8 grade level education program and part of the ALSEA, is that how I say that right?
ALSEA
mm-hmm. school district. And grade level appropriate learning materials and technology equipment are delivered directly to your place of residence. Free physical school supplies are included for each student to provide for an interactive, an offline learning experience. A computer is included for each student and shipped to your door if the family wishes to have this technology. So here's what you can expect. Families can expect standards-based, blended, project-based curriculum, proficiency assessment system, secure learning and communication portal, daily interactions with a teacher, on-call teacher support during the day, parent-coach support and training, regular reporting, and progress monitoring. That's pretty great, Mark, when you think about putting this together. You said kind of the end of July, you know, you had a model that worked well when your kids were distant learning through your school district, and then you brought them back in. You had a model that worked well, and you're thinking, oh, we could provide more. We could do more. Let's do more. And so what I also love about your program is you want the parents' involvement. Talk to us a little bit why it's so important for parents to be involved in their child's education.
Well, last spring, again, when we were closed, we never discouraged parents from sitting in with their child, and our staff was totally comfortable with that. That was not the case from the feedback we were getting from larger communities or larger school districts. And we didn't want to politicize education.
Mm-hmm.
you know, if a child is home and there's a mother or father there, of course they can sit in if they want, mm-hmm. because everything we do is designed to serve and educate. So that lesson we applied into this model. Mm-hmm. We don't ask parents. We want parents directly involved. And so many families were struggling. How am I going to balance work? Somebody's got to be home with the kids. We had so much of that feedback when we launched this program.
Mm-hmm.
And so we worked very hard to create that relationship with parents and that sense of confidence and trust. And it's been a real winner. I mean, our phone rings every day.
That's incredible. Here in Salem, I'll give you a little illustration of what's happened. We have a family that I know of. She works, he works, right? And they have five or six kids. They own a home in a community here in Salem. They own a home, so they're paying taxes. Their neighborhood school where their kids go to is closed because of COVID. Mm-hmm. But they've rented out that school to a local daycare operation. Mm-hmm. So people are bringing their kids there for daycare, but it's closed to school. Mm-hmm. So now she can bring her kids there for daycare because she has to work. Mm-hmm. And now she's paying for that daycare for all of her children and their daycare attendants, who are most likely not school teachers, are now overseeing the education through. Mm-hmm. It just boggles my mind of how that can even be possible. And it's not like they're renting. They're taxpayers paying for that system.
Well, and I don't want to be, you know, hypercritical of our leadership in the state. I can give you my opinion as a small school superintendent who was very sensitive to what you just described, because mm-hmm. I saw that coming.
Mm-hmm.
And my immediate reaction was, well, why don't we just open school?
Right.
And since we were going to be open, I thought, wow, we have to do a really good job and take this very seriously, mm-hmm. and safety and have a complete COVID protocol, whether we agree with it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's kind of a scary thing.
Right.
And so it does send a double message. Daycare's okay, but school's not. And some of that was driven by some data from Europe about the older you are, the more at risk you are. And,
mm-hmm.
and it got politicized a little bit.
Yeah.
And then there was the unintended consequence of how are parents with small children going to go to work?
Right.
There's not enough daycare capacity in the mm-hmm. state. And you get what I call this kind of contraindicated policy,
right.
that creates division.
And trouble for these parents, mm-hmm. because now she's paying like $2,000 in daycare expenses that she wouldn't have to pay because her kids would be in school. And then she's having people that aren't really qualified, you know, because she has to work. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of a challenge. And I think that having parental involvement, having parents talking to their principals and their school teachers, don't you think that's the appropriate way to let the system know, those that are making these decisions, right, in a good way, how that's affecting them personally?
Yeah, no, you're making an incredibly awesome point. And mm-hmm. I mean, your point is so dead on. And that is, the relationship is on an individual level. Mm-hmm. Education happens at the individual level with individual students, parents, and families.
Mm-hmm.
The policy that kind of ultimately rolled out was more top down.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we offer, take it or leave it. And that's the tragedy of this, because
like
so
a one,
many
one size fits all kind of approach in
well,
a sense.
And you can't really, it's easy to justify, you know, but the downside is, what's the consequence of that approach? Real kids with real educational loss and a loss of confidence from families in public education. And that is not happening in our district with all these wonderful families. And you know, we have two online programs. I have a K-12, which does high school as well. And we revamped that one to be more user-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as user-friendly or balanced as Learn at Home. And the feedback, again, I want everybody in the public to understand, we've had people sign up for Learn at Home. And, you know, we didn't get the Chromebook to them in a timely manner because we were trying to ramp things up.
Mm-hmm.
I had to hire people, and mm-hmm. we had to negotiate postage and FedEx. And so we were building this as we flew. But the key was, when people were angry, they got a response.
Right.
And we did two things. We said, we don't want to give you an excuse, but here's the reality. Postage is shipping is delayed with the fires.
Mm-hmm.
And we will get you a Chromebook. And there were a dozen cases where we just drove.
Makes sense. You just
the
went
Chromebook
there. You
to
got
Salem
it.
And
yes.
Portland.
Good for you. Yes.
In order to preserve the relationship with mm-hmm. those families. Now, think about the impact that that had for a family that was sending, you know, very angry emails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you made these commitments and you're not following through.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the fire and everything. And so at the end of the day, we took responsibility for that.
Exactly.
Put the stuff in a van, sent principal out, boom. He was gone all day.
Awesome. That's what leadership looks like.
Well, it changed those relationships.
Absolutely. And again, what a great example and model that other schools could easily implement as well, right? If they really wanted to, they could do something similar to serve their students mm-hmm. in this capacity. Yes.
Well, and there's an ancillary benefit, you know, when my administrators were like, you want us to do what? And I participated. I delivered as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, well, think of the impact this is going to have for our complaining families.
Yes.
And they have neighbors.
Right.
And sure enough, we started seeing that in the signups. Pretty soon we had like neighborhood zip code mm-hmm. areas.
Exactly.
Because they were talking and they drove it all the way to my house.
Well, and when you think about professionals, you know, just put on that cap and, you know, of going through college. Mm-hmm. You and I have gone through college. We get our mm-hmm. college graduate. We're trained in our specific area. And I think of these teachers. I also think of our nurses and the people in the profession. You know, when you're so used to this is how you do your job and everything's been upended. But when you see the benefits, really, people become teachers. People become public service because they're passionate about it. They want to, for the most part, they want to change people's lives. They were probably impacted by a teacher, so mm-hmm. they wanted to be a teacher, right? And so, what a great opportunity to kind of reinvent this. You know mm-hmm. what this looks like as an educator, and really being involved in the students' lives, and coming alongside the parents to yep. say, we can do this together. We are a community. That's awesome.
Well, there's no greater compliment during COVID than a family giving you access to their home, especially if they're self-conscious about their living situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We've had wonderful access. And that's because Learn at Home is set up with, we don't allow judgment.
Mm-hmm.
We're not here, that's not our place. We're here
mm-hmm.
to serve.
Mm-hmm.
Service is the most important process. It builds the relationship that allows children in any circumstance to have better access to their learning, and that's the highest value. It's about the learning.
And that, and you know, so many times you talked about the top-down thing. You know, so many times in our hierarchy of thinking, we have this idea of the triangle at the top, the superintendent or the leader at the top, and then everybody down at the bottom. You know, and but what I see it flipped. I see that triangle with the leadership and the teachers at the bottom supporting the families and the students and all of that. It's like flipped.
Mm-hmm.
And I compliment you on that, because I think, and I've said this a lot in my nonprofit work, the best organizations that really impact lives are the ones that have the flip model
mm-hmm.
With that attitude of we're here to serve. We're here. Our program is here to see success.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we get rewarded, is by seeing lives impacted and education happening, you know. And it'll be interesting this next spring when you start seeing the fruit of this, you know, as the kids get engaged and they're thriving despite all of the changes and the missteps mm-hmm. and the, because really education is a building block, right? You learn these fundamental skills. I know for me, I moved in fifth grade. And from this California school district to the Oregon school district and moving around, they didn't assess me like I needed to. And I didn't get some math things that I should have had
mm-hmm.
going into middle school. And it was evident.
Yes.
I missed a few things. And so I compliment you on continuing to build those blocks for these students. We're going to continue the conversation after this. We're talking to Mark. We're talking about how we can help parents and students all across Oregon with this wonderful program that equips them in their studies. We'll be back after this. Good morning to you. Thank you for tuning in. a wonderful Friday together. I'm Stacey Ann. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM. Taking a look here at our weather forecast, it's only warmed up to 47 degrees here at the KSLM studio. Cloudy sky, rain throughout today. Temperature will get up to about 51, overnight low 34. Throughout this weekend, temperatures in the 50s, sun will be out, so this will be a great weekend to bag up those leaves, and they'll be a little wet, that's for sure, but get those outside projects and kind of make sure everything's prepared for the winter. And I'm wondering how everybody's adjusting to the time change. I know for me, I'm wide awake earlier in the morning and really tired at night, but we should about another week or so, we should get all settled in with this time change. And certainly with fall here and the holidays right around the corner, I mean, everything we know since COVID-19 broke out in March and everything got locked down, everything we know about life has been totally rearranged. And one of the things that has really been heavy on my heart is the families that are having to figure out how to keep our kids moving ahead in their education. And I'm so tickled and pleased to meet Mark and have him in the studio today. And he's the superintendent. And I want to say this right. ALSEI School District. And it's tucked in. And let's talk about the geographics again. You're kind of over there by Philomath and on the way to the coast, right in there in that area. Is that kind of the vision?
Yeah, right in the middle of the coast range, so behind Mary's Peak.
Okay. And so, of course, that's such a beautiful area. If you haven't had a chance to go through that area, like heading over to the coast in the Newport area, it's a gorgeous area and a lot of trees and a lot of... it's amazing how much because I haven't been living here. I forget how the moss grows on the trees and just it's like an enchanted forest in that area. It really is. And so you have a population of students there that because you're more rural in that area and not as close together in general, you didn't have the numbers of COVID. And so you were able to reopen and with all the protocols and all the oversight required by Oregon and the education department to make sure that you could do so, but you went the extra step and you said, you know, what we were doing with our distance learning worked. And so I think there's something more to this. And so throughout the whole state of Oregon now, you've given an opportunity through kindergarten through eighth grade, and then you're working on a high school program too, to say, hey, if you have a student or you know a student in Oregon, you can get involved in this program. And it sounds like your potential is, as long as you have staff to staff it, you can continue to grow this program and be an asset to families that are struggling. If you're out there and you're in a district and you're struggling, your student's struggling, your grandchild's struggling, and you just can't stay, you know, maybe look into this program. And do you know offhand the website where people can get connected to your program?
Yeah, it's just Google Learn, all one word, Learn at Home Oregon.
Okay.
And it'll come right up to the website and has all kinds of information for parents.
And then because it's a part of the Oregon school system, there is no out-of-pocket cost to families.
It's completely free.
Completely free, which is a huge thing for families. Mm-hmm. And again, when you talk about making it accessible to families of all incomes, right, and all backgrounds, what a great resource. What are you hearing from families? What's some of the feedback you're getting so far?
Predominantly positive, and I think the best compliment I got was from a mother in Ben Lapine area, and she has some internet connectivity issues still. But when I called her back, I said, "Well, how's it going?" She said, "Well, I really still want my kids back in the brick and mortar school." And I go, "Okay." I go, "How's the learn at home working versus the one that you were in before at your home district?" And she said, "I can say this with confidence. My kids are learning." Her number one wish is faster internet. So
yes.
I'm working with her on that. We may have to hook her up to satellite.
Well, and that is a challenge here in Oregon. I know it certainly is where I was living in Arkansas and even in South Dakota for families that all of a sudden have to do the home at home learning is not just access to internet, but the goodness of it, you know, and being able to get a good signal is sometimes challenging. So you're overcoming those barriers. And what other things are you looking at that to implement or to grow? What other obstacles are you looking to overcome?
Well, we're also provide full special ed and enrichment services, and that has been a game changer. So for example, I have a special needs daughter. She's my little angel.
Mm.
And I, strangely, I received a report card from, she goes to a larger school district. It's a divorce situation, complicated, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but I digress.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a report card from that large school district saying that she passed all her classes and has attended school every day. She has received zero instruction.
Oh, wow.
And because that district wouldn't do in person. So I've contacted the district. I'm waiting to hear about that. My concern is, does that mean they're claiming funding?
Mm.
And you should only claim funding if you're providing service.
Well, and that is something that I think I've heard, and not to be a negative Nelly, but I've heard a lot of parents say, hey, I know that they're getting funding for my child, and yet I feel like I'm not receiving the services mm-hmm. that they're claiming. And that is a real, real up close issue that families are dealing with. And certainly as we move into Oregon and we talk about budget, we move into the new legislative, and it's hard to keep it non-political,
mm-hmm.
but it really is, because it's these elected officials that are making the decisions, and sometimes the appointed officials, moreover, that are making the decisions.
Well, and all, not to get political, but the nice part about working in LC in a small district, I have an amazing school board.
Mm-hmm.
It's a diverse perspective board.
Good.
We talk openly every board meeting. And what's interesting about it is I pitched this idea to them and I said, I want to ask you as a school board, we did a little presentation mm-hmm. about the potential program.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping for 15 to 100 kids.
Yeah.
And, of course, my conservative board member, she said, well, wait a minute. I mean, this is a lot of money you're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, I'm asking for $10,000, and we may lose it all.
Mm.
But we need to try.
Mm-hmm.
And that school board, 5-0, said, start the program.
Fantastic.
And it's an example of what a system can do when it's oriented towards trying to meet needs and caring about meeting those needs and willing to risk, limited capital to do that. Naturally, it's worked out for us, and we're really happy. But we're still building it as we go. And the Learn at Home service is only going to improve over time. And so I have a whole onboarding special education staff now.
Good.
And we're contacting families. I'm sending people to do testing. And the feedback we've gotten is it's hard to communicate. Crying mothers and a plethora of emails from both mothers and fathers saying, I call you and you call us back.
Right.
That's a common theme.
Isn't that strange in this day and age? I know I've called many officials within Oregon for different mm-hmm. things and information moving here. And we moved here in January. And in March, all this shutdown happened. And it's very difficult. You leave messages, you send email, you don't hear anything back. Good on you mm-hmm. for following through. And what a big response you're getting from these parents. Mm-hmm. It's certainly a wonderful program. Again, Learn at Home Oregon. We're already wrapping up this hour. It goes so fast, Mark. Thank you so much for being a part of this program.
Thank you for having me.
Yep. LearnAtHomeOregon.com. And now they're opening up as well to families that have special needs children. I'm encouraged by that as well. We're going to continue the conversation another time, Mark. We'll have you back in the studio and get an update. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. You're listening to Reliable News Talk Radio, KSLM, news that you can use. We'll record this podcast, put it up on our website at kslm.news. Share with your friends and family. There's help, and we can receive it. Have a great day.